Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Teddy. What can we not stop doing?
We can't stop snapping. And man, there is so much junk to talk about this week, Brad. Starting out with the man junk. Whew, filthiest new card came in this snap. He has not had the splash of some of last season's big hit cards, but he feels solid. How was your experience, Ben?
I love Man-Thing. I think he's such a cool card. He's quickly become one of my favorite cards in the game. I think he's just super
enjoyable.
You're
coming out way higher on this guy than I thought you were going to be.
No, I really like him. I like the feel of him. I was a bit more hyped for him than most people because a lot of people were just like, I remember when Drew Barry first had a video on him when he was data mined. And he's like, yeah, that's a cool effect, but like, you know, you can just play around him. And I was like, Drew, this guy comes down on four. You can choose to throw him in the lane that they have a bunch of one and two costs.
He comes down on four or five or six. Really, I mean, you can get really caught out with this guy.
A great six play, by the way, has been him and Luke Cage on six.
Yeah.
Which has actually won me plenty of games. Now, that type of deck, you need to be a bit more focused on getting earlier power, like Silk and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily Silky Smooth, but like in that kind of vein. Something as simple as like just above rate stuff, right? And honestly, while we're talking about deck types, by the way, when it comes to man thing, you don't need, and I kind of, I'm going to give a little spoiler. My next article for CCG Hub is going to be all about Nico, looking at her. This one, it drops later this week, probably towards the end of the week as we, you know, look ahead at her, since, you know, this week's is Black Knight.
Yeah.
But in that article, I kind of go on a little bit of a tangent-ish kind of thing, and it's about the misrepresentation and the incorrect way of evaluating cards when they're released.
Okay.
And it's what the Snap community does far too often.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things is, like with Man-Thing, of course, junk decks is where everyone goes, right?
Yes, because you can force your opponent to have cards that you're going to be able to synergize against in this case.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine. I think he works great in junk decks, and he's going to have a home there, as he should. However, you don't need to go all in on the synergistic qualities of a card to build around it in that instance to make it work. It just so happens that junk was already an established archetype in which it's a much easier slot to fill with man thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, let's look at a card.
It's an interesting spot right now because it's good against Loki, and it's really a skill matchup up against Bloodstone, right? Are you able to take away spaces from Bloodstone, or does Bloodstone actually block you with a Jeff or a Kitty, and then a Goblin stays on your side, or the Rock didn't land, stuff like that?
Yeah. So, like, he's in a cool spot there with that. But let's look ahead at Sebastian Shaw. We talked about him, right? When we our last episode, where we looked at all the cards moving forward. He's the December season pass card, and he's a 3/3 with the ability that whenever he permanently gains power through things like, you know, Ironheart, Nakia, Okoye, things like that, that he gains.
He has
an additional
text of
plus
being
two.
Anywhere, right? So his deck, hand, or board.
Yeah, no matter where he is. So that's why Okoye is something that's attractive, right? And of course, you know what's going to happen. Someone's going to make a deck, and not even just someone, a lot of people are going to make decks right off rip, being like, okay, this is how we make him work. We run Okoye. We run Nova Killmonger. We run, you know, Nakia. We run, you know, maybe we do Wong stuff with, like, Ironheart.
Wong Ironheart, baby.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, that, and we've seen that before with other cards that have released. You don't need to do all that. I can guarantee you when he comes out, very simple. You play him in Surfer, and you call it a day. That deck already likes
Nova Killmonger, Surfer.
Yeah. And
just
you
that.
Can fit Nakia in that deck, too, where it's not awful. Because I actually like Nakia in Surfer quite a bit, because she's a 3-drop in her own right. And, of course, you're going to probably run another card we see this month, Werewolf, in that deck, because he's a 3-cost. Those are a bunch of on-reveal stuff in there, so...
Yeah.
But you don't need to look at a card and be like, I need to run 6 different effects to really get the juice out of this guy. Man-Thing's in a similar spot where the decks I'm enjoying him most in aren't junk decks. They're just decks that he's in. I've been playing a list that it's the Nebula, Luke Cage, and it's also like Storm, Spider-Man, him, Stegron, Professor X, and like Eliath and Doom is pretty much the list.
So he's like been good cards control.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also Black Widow and Goblin in there.
Kang so the Conqueror.
A total
I know you
of
run
like
Kang.
Three cards.
You're very partial to your Kang.
No Kang.
Okay.
I think I might have a Shang-Chi in there. I don't know. But yeah, but I'm basically running three total cards that synergize with him exclusively. And that's Luke Cage, which is just a good card in general, put in decks if you want to have him in there.
Right.
As well
the Luke
as,
Cage was on the threshold of like just you wanted to run him anyway. And so if you're going to run Man-Thing, you're always going to bring the Cage.
Exactly. And then Goblin and then Black Widow. And he's actually so good in a storm lane. So good. Because how often do you see people play when storm comes down a three? A lot of times, especially in the way the meta is currently, it's not just like they're going to run like an Iron Heart or a single four drop. They'll put down like, you know, a couple one drops and a two drop a lot of times, right? Or just two drops.
Or they'll be waiting to add Silk and Jeff later.
Yes.
Which are way less impactful at minus two each.
Exactly. And he's been awesome just in those kind of lanes. And again, like I said earlier, he's a cool six, a turn six play with, alongside Luke Cage if you're able to get established power down early. Basically, my point is this: the whole roundabout way of coming back to saying you can let cards just be good on their own and function with one or two pieces of synergy in the deck, but you don't need to shoehorn pieces of synergy to make your deck worse by reaching for the, you know, the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah. You want to figure out, like, what's the point that Man-Thing is just better than another 4-cost? And that's about where he's reaching a 4-9, 4-11 stat line for sure. So if you're able to get that kind of value out of him, and in the current meta with all the Elsa, Angela, Kitty, and Jeff, Silk, he hits a lot of targets just naturally. Thanos, honestly, so I see a lot of Thanos when I play these top-ranked opponents. Man-Thing rolls them, man. He rolls them.
I mean, even just hitting a single card in a single lane, like if you, let's say you storm a lane, right? And him playing like on your storm basically makes that storm a wash if you don't have Luke Cage, okay? So let's assume we don't have Luke Cage. And then they have one or two cards there. If they have two cards there and they're both three or under, which is very likely that they will be, then Man-Thing automatically is just a 4-9. That's so good. And
what's scary is like not knowing if they run Luke Cage or if they end up being Loki, if they got your Luke Cage, and then the floor of the 4-5 is not so exciting to me. It could be worse. Yes. Here's an ability that means really, they could have statted him a little bit lower, I think. But, yeah, you get that uncertainty. Can you really snap into whatever they have? Do they have the answer?
Yeah, and that's definitely true. And I think he's probably a better conquest card than he is a ladder card.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough because I think conquest you can easily identify if your opponent's running a certain card, so you know when to just not worry about playing him.
Right.
Or when you are playing him, you know it's likely for the 5 power, and that's pretty much it. Whereas in ladder, you're trying to maximize your ability to get cubes. And I guess in an instance, him being a turn 6 play is where you would have your best luck with him, like alongside Luke Cage.
Surprise!
Man-Thing. But then you have to make sure your deck is well-equipped to, again, have that early power to where you're able to have this point swing or comfortably say I won this other lane, which I still think Professor X is cool in that regard anyway. But anyway,
is Professor X the follow-up to Man-Thing earlier, or is Professor X forcing them into a lane where you're developing Man-Thing?
So I've rarely Professor X on top of Man-Thing, oddly enough.
Okay.
I've actually just been like, basically I'll play like Nebula early, and then I'll try to get Professor X on the Nebula lane, because sometimes I'm noticing more and more it's way more of a toss-up between a 50-50 of, like, are they going to play into Nebula, as opposed to just, you know, sometimes people just kind of say, sure, have it. You know, I think part of that is because Shadow King's so much in the meta now. where they might be running it, and they're like, if I draw on Shadow King, I don't care about the Nebula, I'll just hit it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Which opens up a nice window for you just to Professor X over top of it.
Yeah, right? Or Killmonger, which Killmonger has been. Yeah, the Destroy decks, I think, are in a little bit of a renaissance.
But yeah, I think Professor X, I like just having in decks naturally. He's like the Purple People Eater deck. I love Professor X in that deck. I love being able to just create early game tension of for like priority on your end. To where your opponent feels like, oh, they have to deal with this, got to deal with this. But then just locking it down with Professor X anyway and saying, okay, now we can focus on the last lane with things like Goliath or whatever. I think he's underutilized in that sense. I think people put too much faith in him and just locked it. Again, it's that synergistic quality thing. Professor X is a very, very good card. He doesn't need to be solely in a lockdown deck where you're going all in on that aspect. You're running Storm, you're running, you know, Daredevil, you're running like all these early one drops, like, or like the high Evo stuff, right? To make sure that you get the maximum value of what he can do.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's just like a turn five play. And one last thing before I let you tell me how you've been enjoying Man-Thing. Okay. The same thing I talked about with Nico a bit in this article is the same thing I'll say anyway. You don't need to play a card every game for it to be good. We'll talk about Nico more probably next week or in the next episode. But I will say this. Nico's probably going to be a card, and there are many cards like her in the game, in which you might play her 30% of all the games you play. And the other 70%, you never touch.
You think
her.
That people are just going to be holding her in hand, waiting for the moment, waiting for the spell?
Maybe. But it's also just more so of like understanding when the moment has passed for that card, right? Sometimes you run into these lines in which you're looking, okay, you have two directions you can go into. I can go with this route or I can go with this route. Do I put Mobius down on two or do I put Silk down on two? Knowing the way my hand is constructed and what I'm looking at my opponent doing, there's a very good chance I'm not going to be able to play the other one later in this game based on my curve so far. I'm committing down a certain path. Nico is going to be in a similar vein because the randomness of the spells. And there are many cards like her, like I said, like Professor X being one as well or things like that, where you have an opportunity to play it. If that window passes, then you're not playing it, period. And sometimes that window never arises. And that's where the thing happens of like 70% of the time, you're not playing that card. However, the 30% in which you do play that card, it wins you the game. It's that impactful. Professor X is that way for me. I think
Nico as the Shuri ability on a one cost, right? Like
Yes. And like it will probably line up, and I think Destroy is probably her best home, by the way, as far as just like if you want to shove her into a generic deck. I actually think her best use should be as a card that you run in a deck, doesn't have to be anything in particular, and let her be the ultimate utility machine. But we'll talk about her later. Man-Thing. Have you been playing him? I'm sure you've been playing him in junk decks, but have you been doing anything beyond that? Also, if you have been playing junk decks, by the way, what is your construction of that deck? Because you can go in a few different directions, and I'm trying to determine the best way about it, because it's looking... The deck feels great when you curve out properly, and you have those lines. But if you don't, it feels really clunky, and an easy one is to be like, I'm just going to leave.
All right, well, let me tell you, at the moment of recording this, with the Savage Lands Raptors as the featured location, it
that
feels
helps.
Really good. Because any kind of assistance you can get out of these token spawning, just limiting space on the board, it's kind of an exponential growth of your advantage, basically, when you're able to take away spaces from the opponent. So I have been running a lot of junk. That was the main thing that I was doing with Man-Thing, and it felt good. It felt like he was elevating that archetype, which was already positioned well in the meta, so I was pretty happy with that. My construction was I went away from high evolutionary, and then I'm running the really just a debris focused version. I am bringing in the new Black Widow as well, Hood and Viper. I'm staying away from Sentry. My high end is actually Gamora, and so I'm trying to combo Gamora with ideally Demon, but whatever else I can, and I'm working Silken as well as like high tempo. mm-hmm. quite happy with Man-Thing playing in there. And Man-Thing is like, what is the location that is -2 to all cards? He's like a build your own.
That so location. There's when three you have of those. Loop. There's
yeah, yeah, but the one that's -2.
Yeah, so the -1 is sewage or sewer yes, line, sewer system, sewers. Sewer system.
The what is the -2? I'm not remembering.
What is the -2?
But -3 all, is like whenever the... that location has come up and you have Luke Cage in your deck, you're like, oh yeah, I win this. And so Man-Thing just lets you dictate that, right? Yeah, I think he's been feeling pretty good. Also, can we say a little sideline? Some of the best art and special effects for a card on release. It's so good. He yes, like dribbles when you drag him around the screen, and it's set so that they like drop based on how quickly you're moving him around, and then he spits at all the cards, and all the cards that he will target will glow when you're like hovering him. It's awesome.
They've also added that with have you noticed with Lady of Deathstrike?
Yes, I was very happy to see that. Her making them glow red just like as the Predator yeah. vision is so good.
So I imagine they're going to be doing a lot more effects of that regard. Do they do that with things like Khazar? Oh, it's Necrotia, by the way.
Yes.
Necrotia in the negative zone. Or the
there we go. Spectrum will highlight the cards she's going to buff. And yep. I believe Khazar will as well. Khazar is the one I'm least confident in.
I just don't play, you know, that card enough to be able to give you an answer.
Yeah. He's hard to work in. He's hard to work in, man. But yeah, I think that Man-Thing could just be played. I don't know how much general utility he's going to get. I've kind of moved away personally from the good cards decks, and I feel like forecasts are a little clunky right now, especially with Zabu really biting it with Triple M coming around. Mm-hmm. So if we were able to get Man-Thing without Triple M in the meta, then we'd be looking at something, I think, like a whole nother animal.
What do you think of this deck?
I've seen I think
floating around.
It's solid. I think Hawk is fine. It's this this four cost heavy rely on Zabu that I don't like.
Yeah,
that's really the only thing that I don't like. I like the new Black Widow. We're gonna talk about all the balance changes here in a minute. I like Rogue and I like Shadow King, and then you just high end Iron Lad Doctor Doom. I wonder. I might even drop. Oof. I would love to squeeze Chavez in here. Well, that's still viable before Glenn takes the hatchet to her. But I don't know who I cut.
Did you read my recent article about Chavez and why she's likely to be changed in the long run?
What's your specific take? I mean, I've seen a lot of takes on it.
So, my take is I like Chavez. But my opinion on it is just that in the long run, based on Seconder's, you know, comments, Glenn's comments in particular... and the way that they typically balance the game, and also the nature of Snap in its own right, of being a 12-card game in general.
That's kind of my take, is like 12 cards is already a very consistent deck compared to the competition, everything that it stacks up with. And so when it's really like 11 cards for a subset of decks that are able to fit Chavez, then it's like so consistent.
Yeah, so that's why I think it's not a matter of, you know, if, it is a matter of when they change Chavez. I think it's going to happen. However, silver lining, for those of you who love the card and love Chavez and love using her, I don't, you know, wish you any ill will. I think she's a great card. I like her too. But to appease your pain and suffering as to when this day does come, A, they're going to definitely make her really interesting and cool. They're going to have to if they're going to rework her.
Iconic
also, she's
character,
a cool character. So
fertile ground for awesome abilities.
Mm-hmm.
I have some ideas of like really soft changes, like just give her more trade off. So one thing is you can nerf her power, right? If you make her like 6/6, there is a line. There's plenty of times where like playing the 9-power Chavez is what you want to do, and not being able to do the 9-power Chavez will hurt you, but probably not enough to cut her out of the meta. What if Chavez prevented you, like Chavez being in the deck, same ability as now, but you cannot play on turn one? You always have to pass turn one.
I don't think it's impactful enough.
Turn one and two?
then is that too heavy-handed?
Maybe.
It's such a fine line, right? Because I think one doesn't
What
do
if it
enough.
was, what if it was like randomly, like you have to pass turn three then?
Oh yeah, like she pops up, right? Like randomly at a turn, there's a cool effects thing where she like punches a star into like the middle of the field and like just like
she,
says like you
she,
can't play.
She punches the end turn button. Like, I'll see
yeah.
you later.
Yeah. Be interesting. And it's just you don't know when it's gonna happen. But then that RNG would feel so bad and she would never get ran again.
Yeah, if she was.
What if it's turn six and when she hits it and like she just pops out and she's like, "Yeah, you're drawing me. It sucks."
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think.
Okay.
Don't think that would work. Because it's. But that either way, they're gonna do something cool with her, so I don't think she's gonna be gone. And number two, it makes this interesting development for all of Marvel Snap. Where all players now have to sit down and look at their decks and determine what is the most optimal 12th card I have to put in my deck now. And I think
yes.
that's really cool and really interesting.
I think, yeah, we're waiting for the moment of that Spider-Man change. Where Spider-Man was suddenly a completely different card, still great,
mm-hmm.
got worked into new archetypes spawned off of that Spider-Man change. The
yeah,
same.
That's what spawned Silky Smooth. It was like that last little piece.
Meta mainstay now for seasons after season. So I think the Chavez change, they're going to want to handle it in a way that hits like that. And then every deck that was running the old Chavez and doesn't want to run the new Chavez is going to be wondering like, hey, now I have the option, Doom and Eliath, or Eliath and Leader, or you know, some of these other six drops can work their way in, or an extra tech card, see a little bit more like the Rogue. Rogue is a great card that I think would be really fun to see more of in the meta. She gets cut quite often for just not being as consistently valuable. Side note,
yeah.
Back to Man Thing. Oh man, Rogue on the Man Thing is like, my friend, it's a remarkably similar lane whether you steal Man Thing's ability.
Yeah.
I definitely had that happen a couple times.
Yeah, it's like you need to hit the Luke Cage, not the Man
yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
Which there is some, you know, value, I guess, to if you were the one playing Man-Thing, to play Luke Cage and him in the same lane, in which if they are running Rogue, then there is a chance that they steal Man-Thing, which is a wash and does nothing for that lane.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting little thing.
Or if they run Enchantress, they cancel them both together, which that can be another element where if you lose your Luke and you're running Man-Thing, you can hurt yourself more than the opponent. So, yeah. Run
yeah.
together.
Yeah, I do think that's fair. And I'm wondering if Enchantress needs to come around a bit more. It's tough because, like...
I was afraid you were going to say, I wonder if Enchantress needs to go back to 4-6.
I mean, maybe. That'd be kind of interesting.
It might actually work out because, like, Zabu was one of the reasons she was so scary there for a bit.
Yeah, now MMM fucking Mobius. Fuck. He just says no.
He was supposed to stop Loki. He actually killed Zabu.
Yeah, I don't know if he killed Zabu, but definitely made Zabu less of like an easy just blanket play the card, play the good four drops, which I think is good. Also, I mean, I was ahead of the game before Mobius came out with my Purple People Eater deck going no Zabu because I'm like, I'm just trying to curve out here. I'm just trying to get good, you know, good stuff and curve out and be efficient. But yeah, I like Man Thing. I like where the meta's at in general at the moment. I've liked it pretty much the last, I don't even know how long. I can't tell you when the last meta was, I was just like, nope, not a fan. Even the Loki meta at its height, where it was just nothing but Loki mirrors for that week, I was just kind of like, this is cool. This is, I mean, it's goofy and it's silly. And I probably, when, you know, I play a little bit less than I usually do just because it's the same thing over and over again. But I also understood that was a symptom of a new, really interesting card rather than a symptom of this is a bad meta, right?
Yeah, I personally vibed with the Loki meta enough of like really sinking your teeth into what the mirror looked like. When was the occasion that you snapped? What were the locations you could abuse? Because Snowguard gave you like this whole bag of tricks. And you had the counterplay of like what was that one tech card people would run in the open slot, and where would Cosmo land?
Yeah.
That there was, like, I felt that it was pretty interesting. If it stayed on any longer, it probably would have really burned me out, and I know that it was already burning out a lot of other people, so I'm glad that we have Triple M now. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the meta as well. If we want to roll into our OTA discussion, the lower Eliath presence, whoo, it feels good. It feels good, Brad, because I'm still running him, and he's still clapping.
Yes. Yes, he is. So we have a bunch of changes here. My favorite change by far, because low-key, one of my favorite cards in all of Marvel Snap for the longest time was always Black Widow. And I would always want to run her in any deck
I
could.
I did too.
But, like, you're just like, she has to be the first cut. But now, yeah, with her effectively being a 2-2, but not definitively committing that 2 power into the same lane, being able to spread it because of this change to Widow's Bite, now being a -1, has been really awesome, and I'm running her a lot more. And it makes me happy to see an iconic character like Black Widow get her time to shine. And I think this is a card that's kind of here to stay now. I think it's now definitely, if any list it was on the cusp of being in or not, you can definitely say she's in. I think she's made the cut for Darkhawk list now. And you can even go in those routes where you just don't run Zabu and be a little bit less super focused on all the 4-drops. Maybe just run 2, maybe 3 4-drops in total, including Darkhawk and maybe like Iron Lad and a reactionary Shang-Chi when needed. And then just say no Zabu and run Black Widow instead. That now effectively gives another angle to Darkhawk, which that's awesome. I think she's earned her spot now. It makes me happy.
Yeah, I think it's quite fun. I love the change to being that -1 power in hand in your opponent's hand. Ooh, if we can get something. I mean, Bounce will already let you return her for multiple activations.
Yes.
I think that's more viable than Wong, and I think that's more viable than Absorbing Man for sure. Honestly, Absorbing Man might be fine piggybacking off of a Widow's Bite, depending on how much you enjoy pinching the opponent's draw and their board space. So, yeah, I love it. I love that she's becoming a little bit more viable. She had some great variants, and she was just not seeing much play. But here I think she can breathe a little bit more. Honestly, Brad, would you enjoy the card more if she was a 2-0 and the Widow's Bite got the extra negative, like a -2?
I'd be interested in seeing how that would look, but maybe that's, you know, too much, weirdly enough, because it's all focused on the singular spot, as opposed to being the spread.
It does kind of revive what was the first take on Bounce. If you play Bast, you play Hawk, you play Widow, you play Korg, and you bring in some of these other... Well, you play... Mysterio and you play Hood, and it's a lot of value on Bast, and it's a lot of value on the Hawk.
True. I've been playing that list a little bit with like just the Bounce stuff with Darkhawk. It's good. I think it's cool. It's nice to bounce Black Widow a couple times and just kind of keep hitting over and over again.
What a lot of people wanted to see run and bounce was Forge, and I tried it. I don't know if Forge's spot is really Bounce. He's good in a lot of stuff now. He's good in all the stuff that he was before. Good in some new stuff as well now. But I don't know if Bounce is really where you put it. Like, when I was running these Bounce decks, I was like, Forge is kind of what I want to cut.
Yeah. So let's talk about Forge. So Forge going from a 2-1, giving +3, that recent change he got just a few weeks ago. Maybe a month now? It's been a month.
Yeah.
To now being a 1-1 and back to giving +2. So they went in the different direction where basically I'm sure they had on a board in a room somewhere when they're trying to figure out designs for this original change to Forge when he was a 2-1 +2. They're like, okay, we can do this in two ways. We can either swing him up in power or swing him down in cost. They went for the up in power. It had some ramifications with the Brood Patriot thing and Abs Man, and they've kind of been like, okay, you know.
That was oppressive.
Yeah, let's bring it back a bit. Now he's a 1-1. And you were saying that
he's
a lot of...
Do you think that kills the Iron Patriot deck?
No, you still... I've played it recently with this change. It's still good. Even with going into Brood Abs the same way now, all it changes is you go from having a 15 and a 12 to just a 12 and a 12.
Yeah.
Which is still good.
Right.
Like, I think what his change did is brought attention to a type of list that was there all along, right? I think original 2-1 Forge plus 2 would have been good enough to play in that type of list originally. And him getting that extra buff brought the attention to it.
Now I'm trying to remember, because did he get changed at the same time Absorbing Man went from 4-3 to 4-5?
He did.
That was the same patch?
It was the same OTA.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so that really just skyrocketed that specific deck.
Yeah. So.
And now it's lost a lot.
I think it's still a good deck. I think it's still really good. It's still.
But that deck
soft.
Has lost so much now. It's lost the point on the Absorbing Man. It's lost the point on the Forge. And it's lost 2 points on the Eliath. I don't
know.
I'm
what
feeling
it's
like
though?
It's a little gassed out.
It's gained Elsa Bloodstone. She is very good in that list.
You do fill the board very quickly, but also you have to be incredibly careful because you can't have the Broodling fill the lane. You need the Broodling to leave an open space.
Yeah. And do you know what cards you play to make her the most valuable on that kind of list?
Well, it's like Giddy Jeff.
Vision.
Yeah, Vision's good as well, and like Mysterio. I was tinkering around with a Bast Mysterio Bloodstone Broodlings, but it didn't really gel for me.
Hmm. A little bit too many moving parts to get going, or?
I think I could have refined it more, but then I got pulled over to just playing Elsa Loki, and I'm like, yeah, slam cards.
Yeah. One deck that I think Forge is perfect in now, not just good, literally perfect, the one he slots into more than any other deck, is Phoenix Force. Because now... Before it would run Forge, but then it would mess up your curve entirely if you had to go into those games. Now you're looking at like Forge on, you were going to Forge on 2, you're looking at multiple man on 3, and then like a destroy effect on 4, and now Phoenix Force on 5, a single move, that's not very good. But now you can go Forge on 1, either multiple man or Human Torch on 2, any of the... three destroy effects you're running, Carnage, Deathlock, or Venom on 3, Phoenix Force on 4, and you have 2 turns of moving, and it's a big old card to go around.
Oh, yeah.
And then you still have your fallback into Shuri and Nimrod, and then, like, you know, I personally like the version that runs, like, either Red Skull or Vision plus Taskmaster, to kind of go into that synergy of, you know, Shuri, since you're running her already.
Yeah.
You can go a bit more into the destroy thing, but then I've noticed there's weird friction because now, let's say you're able to run, like, somebody, you play Ghost Spider on the deck, right? Let's say you run and you have a nice run out where you can buff up your multiple mana, stuff like that, with Forge, but then you don't draw the destroy stuff, right? So now you're just playing Ghost Spider to try and, like, move it and then, like, kind of buff around with that kind of thing. And then you go into your Shuri and then Nimrod. But now if you're doing, like, the Destroyer thing at the top end, it's super awkward. It's like, now you're just wasting the turns 1 through 3 that you did to set up this multiple man. And I think it's better just to go linear into, like, you know, you're running Shuri. You know she's good with Red Skull, Taskmaster, and... Or you can do, like, Vision if you want to keep moving stuff around.
Yeah, if anything, I would have said go more movement with that deck if you want a different flavor of it. Like, the Kraven move package, like, bring in the Iron Fist, run your brand-new Midnight Suns Doctor Strange if you got that one.
I did. Well, that's... I guess we'll talk about the last 2 things of EOT, and I want to get to the actual Midnight Suns thing a little bit as well.
Yep.
So next one, Tiger Spirit, going from a 5-7 to a 5-8. I think this is awesome.
It's nice.
Very cool. I think the impact is very minimal, but that's okay. It's going to matter.
The Wongo combo decks are very annoying to hit. Hope you have Cosmo.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think in most games where, like, the Tiger was super important, like, let's say, you know, they play the Tiger and it goes into, you know, the Spirit goes into Death's Domain. That one power doesn't change much. I'm probably upset either way, right? It's yeah. like, wow, they got that 50-50. Damn.
Yep.
Where, you know, the one thing that I found to be really interesting with this buff,
it does mean it ties vision rather than losing to vision. There's like some
fair.
Breaking points where it's relevant, but it is very niche.
It basically now ends up being the best stat line for a 5 cost, right?
Yes.
Which is good. Being a 5/8, getting a strong chi, that kind of thing is very impactful. It is interesting and worth noting that there's that really cool Hela deck going around that someone played, and then Regis picked up the list, and then it's caught fire, and I'm running into it every other game now, where it's Lockjaw, it's the Tiger, it's a Samurai, and then it's like Hela. It's like a control-y and more agency over your discards, because you're running, you know, more targeted discard like Blade, Lady Sif, and then like, you know, the Samurai, and then you're running
yeah.
Hela, not as this big thing of like, I'm just gonna try and, you know, wheel and deal them with all these cool things. You're okay with hitting a Hela early because you also have, like, you know, Black Cat in there and stuff like that too, and then this is a great discard target for Silver Samurai, because then now,
or he's good, she's good to play on the Lockjaw herself.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool list. I think it's pretty interesting, a pretty cool one. It still has that RNG kind of stuff going on a little bit because of the nature of Tiger going in 50-50 with the other lanes, and of course Hela doing her thing. But
yeah.
It's a bit toned down enough where I think it's palatable for a lot of people. It's not my cup of tea. If I'm going to do anything with, like, Hela, there's one home for her, for me, and that's Living Tribunal, where she's not even the plan A. She's a plan B. So, yeah.
Yep. Hela has betrayed me far too many times. I don't know. It'll take something dramatic for me to come back to that deck, because I've been burned so much.
Well,
oh,
I mean,
so much.
It's funny, because when my girlfriend was going through Series 3, and she was going through, like, seeing... like all the cards, one thing that she really wanted for a while was Hela, and I was
yeah.
the same exact way going through Series 3.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
like, it looks so cool, and you're like, this is gonna be nuts, this is gonna be so much fun. And then I had already been long since, you know, complete with like the collection, and when she was in that point, I was like, no, trust me, don't spend tokens on her, just
oh, yeah.
if you get her, you'll get her eventually.
Yep.
You're gonna be heartbroken more often than not.
Yeah,
but I like her Living Tribunal, because that one, you don't care about the RNG of her as much, because Tribunal, except for those like things like you hope, you know, Onslaught goes on to your Iron Man, of course, right? But if it doesn't, you're dumping enough power where it just spreads it out evenly regardless, where you're just like, I don't care. So,
yeah.
And of course, we have the last one here, Teddy.
Well, it's one of the last ones. We're missing Shuri on this page, but Eliath is a huge one to talk about. Down from the 6/5 to the 6/3.
Whoopsies.
There she is.
There she is.
Yep. Awesome.
I already forgot about her. Because it's
yeah.
such a low-impact change.
The Shuri change does nothing. The Shuri deck does not care.
Okay.
You don't run...
Hold on.
Are you going to say Ravonna?
If she gets changed to a 2. As a 3, it does nothing. If she gets changed to a 2, then now... In a, you know, maybe you can do a negative list where you're going all in on trying to get either negative Shuri or Wong on 3. Because you can run Zabu, you can run Psylocke, and you can run Ravonna.
Yep. Yep. I don't like it because Mobius murders it all.
Okay,
Mobius
well,
has put
yes, yes.
Mr. Negative in the ground for me.
Yeah. It's a weird breakpoint, but I think Shuri being, she could be a 4/0 and it's fine. I honestly,
yeah.
if they were going to change her, she should have just changed to a 4/0. And now that would make her really cool in negative decks. Cause now you
oh,
can
yes.
play Jayne on, you know, on
and
5.
Summon the Shuri into hand and then slam down a 10 power Iron Man.
And then, Mystique the other lane. That'd yeah. be great. but the change is fine. It's whatever.
No, I'm still exclusively running Shuri to Climb on the free-to-play account here, and I'm doing great. I'm knocking on the threshold of infinite just from knocking out my dailies, so she's good. Keep
great
running
deck.
Her.
Great yep. deck.
I'm still running Eliath in that Shuri deck as well. What do you think of the new Eliath?
Fine. I thought he was fine. I still think he's fine. I understand the change from 6-3 or 5-3 power.
I do as well, especially as like recognizing the community sentiment of like, we understand there's so many people, we're going to try something here, and then getting data of like what it's doing to the meta, right?
Yeah. And look, I mean, I know last week I basically said get good about Eliath, and I still stand by that for the most part. But this change does provide the chance to have to let your higher skill ceiling shine, because now there's the simple thing of very much like, okay, before the reason Vision was so good in the meta currently is because of Eliath. You can now just move Vision to where you anticipate Eliath going, and then you don't care, right? That is even more so the case because of this power change. But then, of course, you can move a Jeff to a lane that might be empty on their end, and you think Eliath is going to go there because they're winning the other two lanes. And yep. You just tie, and then you can
Jeff matching, Silk winning, Doombot yep. winning.
Doombot winning.
Vision looking much better here as well.
Yeah, and I mean, even... Well, no, Mysterio won't work because that does count as played.
Yeah, it does count as a play.
Which is unfortunate, but, you know. But yeah, there are so many options. You know what's an interesting one that I haven't really considered too much with Eliath that I just kind of thought of? If you have priority, that's the caveat, of course. But Ghost right. Spider is kind of cool in that regard. You lose the Ghost Spider but pull over something big enough.
Yep.
But that's more fringe or whatever, but that's fine. But yeah, in general, it showcases that higher skill ceiling because now you have these lines to choose from of ways of, okay, how do I tie Eliath? How do I beat Eliath? How do I call out where it's not going to be played? And yes, of course, in the matches where your opponent, you know, hits the nuts and they're playing Lockdown, Sinister London popped up and they played Professor Rex on it, Lockdown two lanes, and then they have priority and they Eliath you on the last turn. Yes, you're still going to lose in most of those instances. That's fine. Did you see the question regards to Eliath and like what the dev team wants out of him, stuff like that, and what Glenn said about it?
No.
He said that they
like
wanted...
Like, I saw the patch notes and stuff of like explaining yeah. to bring him down a little bit, but...
He said that they wanted essentially... let me pull up the exact quote real quick. Here, you give me your thoughts on Eliath so far while I pull that up.
Yeah, so I still like him. I'm still running him in the Shuri deck. I'm still running him in a number of different decks. When you're able to hit him early off an Iron Lad, whoo, you could really bury the opponent. What I feel like Eliath is giving the meta is the balancing factor to what was otherwise the dominant meta play of trying to dodge initiative and only play from behind. And so Eliath gives you the advantage of playing from ahead. And that way people can kind of split. And if you see your opponent is trending one way or another, you can then start to add in the additional cards that you think you're going to see. Are they always playing Kitty and like trying to jump away? They're probably running a Shang-Chi as an option for control, and then they're looking to be able to dodge control cards. Are they slamming a ton of points very quickly and even almost conspicuously spreading to have advantages in two lanes so that they're flipping first? That Eliath is likely coming down the pipeline. So having that extra connection to being able to fill in a deck's play style, I think is fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I was able to find the answers, by the way. Essentially, perfect. Someone said, does the second editor recommend meta that players want to reveal first? Like they want priority.
There we go.
Glenn said, deciding to throw priority is a much more fun and interesting decision if it has an appropriate... I cannot talk. If it has an appropriate risk or reward. However... Yeah. Revealing second was mostly just an advantage before Eliath, as it both protected final plays from interference and ensured your own interference had maximum impact. Eliath's role was to put tension on that and make players want to reveal first more often. And then someone else had a different question to follow up with this. saying, while it's true that Eliath gives more incentive to fight for priority, what does the team think about the fact that some decks are just not really able to do so while dodging powerful tech cards, therefore making Eliath's very existence a source of constant uncomfortable mind games between getting Eliath or Shang-Chi'd, Shadow-Kinged, etc. Eliath does make fighting tech cards easier, but is very scary alongside them as well.
Yeah.
He replied, Eliath's performance is generally at its weakest alongside most tech cards like Shang-Chi, Enchantress, Shadow-King, etc., because those cards are also strongest when played at the end of the game. That's among the reasons we were comfortable making him, because he would offer defense and competition for some highly played cards at the same time. So Glenn
especially
is
as
out
a
here,
six cost rather than the previously rumored five cost.
Yes. So Glenn's out here saying, you know, it's a good thing that Eliath exists because it does create tension of this, I'm going to dodge priority, which I thought was an issue. That was probably of the, and I said earlier that I don't think there was any recent meta in which I was actually not enjoying the game, right? I think the last time that occurred was probably the Shuri meta, not because I found the deck oppressive. It was more so because I found it very boring. Because I was like, I guess I'll play it too, and then I'll just try to win the mirrors, you know? And there's a difference between a Shuri meta mirror and a Loki meta mirror, right? Because at least the Loki meta has way more intricate lines of play and interest to it, right?
Shuri plays Shuri, Red Skull. Is he going to arrow? Is he not going to arrow? Full pass into She-Hulk? Wow, hadn't seen that one before.
Yeah.
Neat trick.
So I haven't had any meta where I wasn't enjoying it. However, the closest would be the very height of the power level for Kitty Pryde, especially when people started figuring out that Shuriti was a very good deck, because I found the priority dodging to be obnoxious and annoying.
Oh, yeah. And it was getting to the point that Invisible Woman was becoming like a mainstay as the counter to the initiative dodgers.
And we talked about that, and I even said I think that's incredibly unhealthy for your game if every tech needs to do that.
Yes,
I think that's
because then
super bad.
The Shuriti deck was like, well, I can just run that too, and I'm still dodging.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm definitely not a fan of that. But Eliath, you know, again, puts tension on it where I'm not seeing as much Shuriti. It doesn't mean it's a dead deck, even with Shuri's change. I'm not sure he's a kiddies. I guess Shuri's too, but it's definitely...
It's kind of dead.
You have to work a bit more for it.
Gotta work really hard.
Well, to be fair,
I feel like you
Forge,
might as well play Destroy if you're going to be loading up a Hulkbuster and a Forge onto a card.
I mean, Forge and Hulkbuster, stuff like that on Kitty still are really impactful. And you still can, like, if you go Forge on one, Kitty on two, Kitty is now a 1/2, returning as a 1/3, and on three, player again alongside something, bouncer back. And then on four, you're going, Kitty, so now she's a 4. Now you're going Kitty Hulkbuster. Now she's a 9, comes back as a 10. Kitty Shuri, now she's a 20. You're still having her in Taskmaster on 6, and it's 20 power in each lane. That's still good.
It's 20?
I guess.
If you can hit the best line.
So, I mean, and then if you take, you know, Forge out of that, then you're looking at, 16?
16s.
So, that's still fine.
You could just play Kitty turn one instead of Forge, and you make up a little bit of the difference, but yeah.
Yeah, then I think it's maybe 18, but it still might be 16. My math could be very wrong in either way. It's less than 20, I can tell you that. I don't think it's dead, but I'm happy to see it less frequently because of Eliath. And I think that should continue. And I think this is probably where Eliath stays for pretty much ever, unless the game changes in such a way in which he becomes all either really oppressive or, oddly on the other end, kind of useless.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still, like, some interesting changes that could happen to the card if Second Dinner, like, wants to shake things up with a different ability but not make a different card with that ability. He could become cheaper and then only affect unrevealed cards or only affect revealed cards if they wanted to twist it one way or the other there. But really, because they're intentionally wanting him to be an advantage to playing from ahead in initiative, making him cheaper but then only affecting the unrevealed cards could be an interesting spice. But yeah, I think this is where Eliath is going to settle for a little while. And I think that he's going to get added back into high tempo, good cards decks once people refine what that list is looking like.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, it could be that Man Thing Hawk deck finishes with Eliath.
Basically playing my purple People Eater deck at that point, which is still very good. Black Widow is in there now. So instead of Medusa.
Black Widow for Kang? Oh, that's so much better.
Oh, no, I never put Kang in that deck.
Okay, good.
You're thinking of the Infomaniac deck.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which that one was still fun. I still enjoy playing that one. I need to kind of come back.
Are you
to
still
it.
Running White Queen in that one as well?
No, I'm not. That
do
one
you
I
have? Do you have your season stats to share from last season with the listeners?
Yes.
Should we do that? Should we make that our last segment here?
Do you want to quickly talk about Black Knight next week?
If I must.
We'll keep it short because we both think he's pretty mid.
Right.
Let me pull up the spotlight cache for all the wonderful people to kind of look at if they so want to. Where is it? Is it, schedule? Schedule. Now, we do have Black Knight coming out next week on Tuesday at 3 p.m. EST. And that's going to have an option to give you either Black Knight, of course, in that spotlight cache, or MODOK, or Stature. As the website's freaking out, I cannot scroll. It's not loading. Of course, that is bound to happen no matter what I do. Oh, it's working. Look at that.
He seems interesting. I'm not super enthused just to play discard. And at 4 cost on the blade, so the high roll right is you hit the Infinaut with a targeted discard. You're then able to play the blade. You're able to play a Taskmaster off of the blade. And then you're able to Ghost Rider the real Infinaut body back to the board. And you have 20s all across the board. That's really an insane high roll, but it's going to be very hard to hit.
Just to give you an idea of how hard it would be to hit that line, is you need either Black Knight on 1 or 2. Specifically, you kind of really want to get the nuts at that point. Just go on 1 and then Mobius or something like that on 2, just something to, or even Morbius to something to protect yourself, or something to just be a 2-drop, maybe Luke Cage. I don't know, whatever, a 2-drop that's not discarding something essentially. And then you go on 3, Lady Sif, targeting either something like a Death or a Infinaut, a big card in your hand. Turn 4, playing the blade as a 412, 420, whatever. On 5, playing Taskmaster to copy the blade. Turn 6, playing Ghost Rider and I guess something else to really make it work. Now, you could do, we talked about this prior to the episode recording. We talked about maybe Zabu as that 2-drop, and then your line is now Black Knight, then Zabu, all the stuff I just mentioned, and now on turn 6, you can go Ghost Rider to bring back your big old Infinaut, as well as a Shang-Chi to hit something, or maybe you just drew into Black Cat that last turn or something like that, and you can play that. Give him more power. So you have options. But I think overall the card is just, the juice is not worth the squeeze. I think it's really cool. It's an interesting card. I like it. I'm going to get it because I'm already collection complete. Why would I just not get it? And I'm happy to be proven wrong, but I think any deck in which you either build around this card, or if it's a traditional destroy list, or I'm sorry, discard list, and you shoehorn him in, you're actively making those decks worse.
Really? As just a 1 cost? It feels like the opportunity cost of putting him in is not that bad, but then again, it is it's a tight combo deck to balance out discard effects versus the scaling effects.
Yeah. And I guess you could, try to throw my own philosophy back in my face, as what I was saying earlier, of maybe he's that 30% card, right? In which 70% of games you don't play him, and then you're focusing on your other way to go about it, and he's the high roll. But
it could be, what if it is a Dracula dump? Dracula dump's kind of bottom of the meta right now, but you're not hitting Dracula.
You mean Dracula Zoo?
But then you see... Yeah, Dracula Zoo, Dracula dump is what... I've heard it either way. So
I just want to make sure that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, you have Dracula, a couple big cards, and then all tiny cards to thin the hand, right?
Yeah.
You see you don't have Dracula, but you do have one of your big boys that you just drew, and you're holding Black Knight and Blade. So it's like, pop, I want the Destroyer or the Infinite stat line, you know?
Yeah.
And, oh, but he's not on reveal. I was like, Werewolf by Night, but he is not on reveal. All of these weapon generators have been on reveal. He's not even ongoing. He's just like a passive. And the Blade is also just a passive, so.
Yeah, okay. it's also technically
cut the Werewolf
ability.
By Night idea, but still, I think just him plus Blade together waiting to draw into your big boy is fine if you're built around being able to use it. And look out for Shadow King.
Yeah, Shadow King getting this down to a 4-0 again is really, really funny. Because then that actually opens up a line for turn 6 for them to go Shadow King Shang-Chi and then just kill this and like your Taskmaster, and then you just lose those lanes, basically.
Yes.
That feels really bad.
I think that Taskmaster probably gets cut from a competitive version of the deck. I don't think you want to be establishing such a juicy target early into yet another juicy target on 5.
Yeah. Now,
if you have Cosmo, maybe with Cosmo it's okay because that'll protect the Blade. But
why are we playing Cosmo in our discard deck? Like, what else are we protecting in that?
Dracula dump has always had Cosmo.
Oh, you're talking about, I'm sorry, you're talking about Dracula dump still. If you look at like regular discard, if you want to play it in that, one thing worth noting is that the Blade will get the new power of Apoc. So
it'll be a 12 off that first discard. Or if you establish the Black Knight later on, like on 4, and then you're going MODOK into a APOC that you've already scaled a little bit, you could be looking at a decent
But then
Blade.
I think it's random. APOC is always going to be on the right-hand side of your hand when you've discarded it. So I think the thing on the left would be the first card you
True. If the MODOK is bad.
Yeah.
With the
so
Blade.
If you hit like a Blade or something in the left hand side of your hand with the MODOK, you're gonna cry and just not worry about this stupid. That's what I'm saying. The opportunity cost is really awkward.
It is a generated card. Is there a collector Devil Dino Helicarrier angle?
Helicarrier is interesting. But here's the
thing. You're getting Quinjet in there. So the Blade.
What happens first? We have to figure this out because this is actually really important and worth noting.
Okay.
You have the Knight down, right?
Yes.
You play Lady Sif and discard Helicarrier.
Yep.
Helicarrier then has to finish its effect, right? And then add the random cards to your hand.
Oh, do you have enough space in your hand
to get the Blade?
I don't know because Black Knight being like a passive could honestly hit at any point in the stack, I feel like.
It makes sense that it doesn't make sense to me, I guess, initially, that the discard would happen and then the Blade and then the effect would happen. It feels like that effect, because it's tied to the discard, has to happen all at once, and then the Blade is after that.
Yes. You talking it through, it makes the most sense that way, but me watching other things in Snap is like, it could be different. Like, Bloodstone hits when that card is face down. It has not revealed, it's not, like, played in any other sense of the game, but when it comes up, it's getting that buff.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is an interesting thing with that kind of deck. I like the idea of it. I'm a big fan of, you know,
then you're adding four cards.
Like, yeah, and Ghost Ridering back the thing is always fun, but I don't know how effective that is. And yes, you could also, you know, the Zabu thing does make it so that you can play the Blade as well alongside Ghost Rider. So your last turn could be Ghost Rider Blade. That's worth noting, I suppose.
You could easily get that into a 20-point, 18-point final turn.
So yeah, it's just, but as we're talking about all these different places the Blade could go, I'm thinking of the decks as they exist already, right, and I'm just finding myself wondering and pre-convinced of it that those decks are just better without this. Is the ceiling being raised by like a foot? enough for the floor to also go a foot deeper.
Right. Yeah, that's the question. It does, honestly, like, making the combo a little bit more complex does hurt Loki, which is still out there for sure. The Elsa Bloodstone decks are still going to do what they do and try and just stack power and run you over.
But then, of course, Shadow King being played everywhere at the moment because he's just a good card now, which I'm happy about. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, you could run in the Luke Cage answer if you want, but...
True, but now we're looking at more pieces to protect this exact instance of a card. Where what does that Luke Cage accomplish outside of location variance and what it's protecting in these decks across the board anyway? Nothing else.
No idea.
So now you're shoehorning a single synergies. You know that's like
it lets you run Shadow King if that's what you want your control card to be, so that you could Ebony Blade and Shadow King on the final turn.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's very niche. Yeah, it's going to be inconsistent to hit. So, discards kind of grasping at straws here. They've got Hela. That's always going to have a bit of a meta. I see Hela as like the ginger, the redhead of Snap. It's going to be a consistent minority. And then Apoc is struggling. He's on the struggle bus right now.
Yeah,
not quite as bad as his portrayal in X-Men Apocalypse, but still rough.
I mean, Oscar, it was Oscar Isaac, right? That played
him? Yes, tragically.
He did what he could. He did.
You think it was
could.
The script, not him? I think, I don't know. This was not Oscar Isaac's finest moment.
What is Oscar Isaac's finest moment then?
Oh, man. I mean, Duke Atreides is pretty good. I'm a bit of a Dune fanboy, to be fair. That's kind of, it was perfectly targeted for me. I was like, man, he gets to really shine. And Moon Knight, for any like shade you want to throw at Moon Knight, it was the perfect setup to let a great actor be great.
Yeah. I also like his 5 minutes of screen time in Dune.
Yeah.
He was good in that.
That's what I said first. You got more than 5 minutes.
It's kind of 5 minutes.
I know the movie was long, but he did get more time there.
I mean, in total screen time?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, probably, but still, it's funnier to say he got 5 minutes of screen time.
Man.
All right, let's pull up these... hold on. Let me see if I can even get this pulled up correctly.
Yeah, so the event's over. You're going to have
a screenshot, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if I can find a screenshot.
I don't know if I have a clean one to share here, but I'll once you pull up yours, I'll piggyback, or I could start just talking us through. So, the card that we played the most. So some things I found super interesting about this season reveal of stats, and some were like, sure, they were just keeping track of stuff that already had like shoe-in answers, like. Your most played card is, drumroll, Kitty Pryde, because you play her over and over every game. You get to play her multiple times a game. Obviously, she's going to win. I was like 5 plays away from 500 plays of Kitty Pryde in a season, Brad. That's insane. But it also just made sense. Also,
because you're playing like 6 times a game.
Yeah, exactly. When you're getting played that much, obviously, she was going to win. My favorite card, the ones that I had upgraded the most, it was Snow God. Biggest glow up of a card that... we've maybe ever had in a patch. So I took up my champions variant from zero to hero to be able to run those Loki decks. Most seen location was obviously Limbo. So there's just like some things that are skewed toward other effects that make them kind of obvious. The shocker for my season stats was my mascot being... the summer vacation white queen. I was like, what? Because that actually is my avatar. That's my avatar for everything. I was like, they picked that because it's my avatar. I was reading deeper. 87% win rate in deck. 91% win rate when it's on the board. And I realized why. I did not play much white queen, but I did play her for one specific time. And that was for the first 5 hours of the season with Loki. My night one Loki deck was winning that much to get to infinite. And then I cut her. But on the climb to infinite, she was unparalleled.
Well, I don't have a screenshot, but I remember mine.
All right.
So what was your location, by the way?
Most seen?
Yeah.
It was Limbo.
Okay, so it was mine.
And the one that I had the highest win rate was a very nice 69% up against Ruins, because apparently I play decks that wreck C3.
So my... That's actually really funny. So my location that I had best percentage was 75%, and it was District X.
With Loki, I guess, being good at like a hodgepodge deck.
I guess? I didn't play...
If you have Quinjet down and then District X pops up, yeah, you snap on him.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Limbo was my most seen. My most played card was Jeff.
Than Kitty?
I didn't play Kitty nearly as much as you did.
So are you more Silky Eliath kind of player?
I was the what?
Are you more Silky Smooth kind of player?
Yeah, and I think there's a point where I cut Kitty from Silky Smooth, but I've been playing a lot of Darkhawk. But yeah, so my most played was Jeff at like 290-something. Then my favorite card is what it was listed as, right?
The card you upgraded the most.
Yeah, it was Darkhawk. I upgraded it 20 times.
What's your best split?
None. None of them.
You're still chasing?
I still don't have a crackle. Do you want to know how many splits I have right now of Darkhawk?
How many splits do you have, Brad?
I have 21 splits.
No crackle.
No crackle.
What background do you have to have for the crackle?
You don't need a background for a crackle.
I know, but what do you want?
Oh, I just want the crackle at this point. I do not care what it is.
Oh, wow. That hurts.
I have 8 inks, 6 golds, which is random stuff. And they all look fine.
Sure.
Like I have a gold back that has a gold sparkle. I have an ink with the black effect and stuff. That's all cool and nice. Just give me the crackle.
Is it different variants or all the same?
It's different variants. The one I've been really honing in on trying to do is the Kim Jacinto one, though.
So good.
It's a very good one.
All right, win rate.
Him, Darkhawk, and then Storm are those two white rabbits I'm chasing. I'm trying to get crackle. Because I have that nullified Storm, and I'm like, oh, if I can just get that red crackle, I will...
Yep.
I will never upgrade another card. I don't need to at that point. Like, that is the dream, right?
The grail.
I would also just like the purple crackle for Darkhawk, please. Because that's the crackle I have the most of, is purple.
Ken, you in the Purple People Leaders deck, you have to have the purple crackle on every card. That makes it the Purple People Leaders.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Though the Jeff in that one has gold crackle.
Yeah.
Which I think that one's
purple
cool.
And gold is good.
I got my Shang-Chi's got gold purple crackle. You know, my Spider-Man's got purple crackle in that one. It's got a gold back purple crackle because I got two Spider-Man crackles on the McFarland.
But zero for that Hawk.
And 21 splits. So then my most effective card was Brood with a whopping 90% win rate when playing it. Which that one is the only one I have as far as evidence goes for like a screenshot. So let me, can I open it? And no, hold on.
Was that one the same for you as in deck and when played as being, it's the best for both categories? Cause I had White Queen as best. They separated it as like best when in deck and best when played. And I had White Queen for both. With actually a higher win rate when I was playing her than when she was just in the deck, which surprised me because that I cut her from the deck.
So I was just playing a lot of that Patriot, that Brood, Abzan.
Yes.
And it's so good. This was also before Abzan got changed too, I think. Or maybe it was on the cusp of it.
Yeah, the peak of that deck was crazy, and then getting Eliath made it still so good.
Yeah, because you get
Eliath is like, oh, you want to have early tempo? Well, here's an entire deck that makes early tempo.
Yeah, those were mine.
Nice.
You know, it was a good season overall. I'm looking forward to the next one as far as like the end of the season. I do trying to think of, like, if we look forward real quick, if we're going to just look at these other, what's it called? The other
caches, spotlight caches.
So this week, we have MODOK and Stature. This one, if I had to give it a star rating, probably 3 out of 5 stars, and that's solely for the MODOK and Stature. I'm tempted to give... I would have given it a 4 if this was the first time we saw this, because those two cards are great together, and they're great in general. No. And if you don't have them, you should get them.
Have you run Stature in anything since Triple M? I have not.
Yes, and she's been absolutely fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what else? Hey, you know what the key is? You know what you run in your deck with Stature? You run Lady Deathstrike.
Oh, just to get rid of it. Yeah, fair enough.
I have killed so many. I have killed so... Because I'm also... Okay, I made a deck that I just called Spotlights. And it's running Man-Thing, Stature, Black Bolt, Lady Deathstrike, and the Samurai. All the variants from this week's Spotlight Caches.
Yep. If you have a plan for the Mobius, you can make it work.
Yeah, so I'm running... And that Lady Deathstrike dude has been great for the Mobius. I'm just like, bye-bye. And then look at that. I can go ahead and play Iron Man and Stature on 6 now. That's great.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I could be convinced on a 2.5 out of 5.
Okay.
But yeah, it's if you don't have these cards, they're cool. If you have Stature and you have MODOK already, I think these are some of the weaker variants I've seen for these. This MODOK is kind of cool because it reminds you of more traditional MODOK, more so than this one does. But I think this card is...
Oh, Brad, I just saw Quantumania the other night. It's so... I was laughing every time he popped the helmet off. I was like, no, Darren. who made
you? And that
you?
Sucks. I like that actor a lot. And I'm like, you really did this to him? He was in House of Cards and he was really good.
Oh,
in
man.
That one season he was in. But yeah, the few... If you have these cards, I don't think Black Knight is a card you open caches for.
No,
I can't recommend spending tokens on him because he's also 6,000 tokens. But like,
yep,
you do you, right? I just don't think.
If you love discard, and especially if you've been somebody who's been playing Ghost Rider, bring it out as a very niche card.
Yeah. So then we go into the next week, which is pretty interesting. We have Nico, we have Kitty Pryde, and Phoenix Force, a really weird mashup of cards. Now, I do think Nico goes very nicely into a Phoenix Force deck.
Yes. Yes.
Because she has the destroy and move synergies in there. And
destroy,
I still stand by
move
it.
And buffing, right? Yeah. All three.
Yeah. So that's like really cool home for her. So if you don't have her, obviously you're not going to have her. If you don't have Phoenix Force, then I could see opening these. I'm going to be opening them because I don't want to spend 6,000 tokens on Nico. I don't want to spend 6,000 tokens on anything anymore, for the most part.
How hard are you going to chase these variants? Because that Kitty Pryde and Nico are fire.
That Nightforged Nico is so good. And that Kim Jacinto Kitty Pryde.
Can you just see it with a crackle already?
Yeah.
Purple crackle.
Dan had Phoenix Force I could live without.
Yeah. We already got a good one in the Battle Pass.
Yeah, which, you know, these variants get replaced by whatever they resurrect anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, it's a very, like, the Phoenix Force one is, like, don't care about, but the other ones are cool.
But this Nico is insane. Nico herself, I will, you know, when my article comes out, you'll be able to see how much I like this card. I think it's going to be a very strong case. I still think Werewolf by Night edges her out. But I think there's a very strong case to be made that she's the best card this month. The more I've dug into it, the more I've looked into it.
Are you not including Elsa?
No, I'm not including Elsa.
Okay.
Elsa, I think, is definitively the best card this month.
Yeah, now I'm with you. It's Battle Pass card and then the others.
But I don't count the Battle Pass cards because those are innately kind of pushed half the time. We have MODOK and stuff like that in there too. So.
Right.
But yeah, I think out of the ones you can pull, she's very possibly the best this month. Just the utility she offers in just any deck you play her in. It doesn't have to be specifically destroy. If you can obviously put her in a deck that makes better use of those abilities on average, of course, she's going to be great there. but I think she easily can be so impactful in any other deck at all. I think this is a good week. If you're one of those people that
read the Nico trick bag, and if you just read all of the spell abilities and you're like, this card cycles through these randomly, and you're like, is that a 2-cost? No, it's a 1-cost.
And that's a lot.
Right?
Get a demon, destroy a card, draw 2, move 1 location to the right, give +2, replace that card's location, add a copy, double this card's power. I mean, look, for destroy alone, not even counting Phoenix Force, 1, 2, 3, 4 really good effects. The demon itself in the late game, if you have that one pop up, that could be impactful too. You have a Carnage that you're not going to have anything. Sometimes destroy is those awkward things. You're like, you don't have really that window in the late game
You drew a rock that someone else put in your deck. Yeah, I'll make it too. Into a demon. High key. That copy, add the copy the back copy into your hand might be favorite. The best ability.
Especially in destroy. How often do you see cloning vats and you're like venom?
Yeah.
Like that's really nice.
Because that's what it is. It's after you play. You're gonna get all of the benefit of any board interaction, and then it comes back.
And again, I do stand by the fact that she is a card where if it doesn't work out based on the way that the randomness comes up with it or your line, don't freak out and be like, this card's bad, and then immediately cut her. Keep in mind of those games where like you will eventually need to play her, and then that could be the difference between winning and losing.
It's so sneaky up against the opponent where you explode with the doubling or you explode with the copy, and it's coming in late in the game when they
again,
really hard
I think
for them
this
to be
is,
able to react.
Again, I think this is a better Conquest card because of the randomness and because the likelihood you're going to not play her. But I don't think that means you cut her. I think she offers something we've never seen before besides maybe Thanos in the stones. She offers the most insane amount of utility ever for a card. And that's going to be so good. So I cannot wait to be able
Show us Werewolf and his week. We're saying is the kind of the king of the hill.
This is
he does
a 5
seem
of
like
5.
His stats
this is the best,
are going to be
this
nuts.
This is the best week. Silk in there is 6,000 card.
Yeah, Silk is a grab.
Yep.
Ghost Spider's
Werewolf
fine.
Werewolf is going to be very good in things like
Werewolf
Surfer.
Is going to be very good. Bring that Surfer back, baby. Surfer Dakin. God, I mean, we cooked on the previous episode of Dakin into Blade with Werewolf already developed and how much power that could burst. And Surfer plays on top of all of that.
Yeah. And then just wait for, Shaw to come out in December in this exact same deck. It's going to be cracked.
Shaw, Nova,
So this is a 5 of 5. Werewolf is probably, I think, like I said, edges out Nico as the best card. Simply because Nico offers insane utility, but Werewolf can just be played anywhere. Yes,
you
can
play
Surfer. Are
you going to try and use Werewolf with Elsa? And like embrace a cluttered board where he's going to fill and then jump away? Or are you going to try and have a very lean board? Because like even a goblin could trigger Werewolf and then the goblin's taking up space on the opponent's side.
Well, let's check the
also,
wording.
Also, Thor. Thor goes hard because he's an on-reveal that creates an on-reveal.
After you play an on-reveal card in another location, move there and gain +2 power. So in the case of playing, if it's a full lane, for example, and you play Goblin on there and the Goblin hops over, once that on reveal completes, when the Goblin's on the other side, based on the wording, then it'll hop over. Just want
to
make sure
It has to hop over to get the buff that was confirmed by Glenn.
Yeah, because if it just stayed still, which we talked about this when we first looked at the data mines for this card, I was like, I could see it doing that, but that'd be really, really good.
Rule lawyer, it made sense that it wouldn't have to move to get the buff, but thematically, it made sense that it had to move to get the buff.
Yeah, and power level wise, it made sense.
Yes.
But yeah, this is the best week. Now, do you foresee...
What is this werewolf design where he still has human head hair? What the heck? Why does he have a ponytail?
He's just got that middle...
There's a ponytail.
Oh yeah, that is
like human length head hair and then fur everywhere else. I'm like, whew.
he's cool. I mean, this is the one you want, right?
Yeah.
These comic book
yellow
variants
eyes.
Be, dude, once we get to the point where we have the potential to have a full deck with these, Man-Thing, Werewolf, Thanos yep. is going to be one of them. Oh,
Thanos.
Let's pull it up because it is the comic book cover. When people think of, excuse me, hello, snap the fan, please. It is the comic book cover. When you think of comics, when you think of iconic covers, this is in everyone's top 10. And there's, I don't think it's particularly close, right? Like it.
No,
could
it's
be
so good.
A lot of people's number one. It is the Infinity Gauntlet from the Infinity Saga. That is one of the greatest covers of all time. There is
a great cover for a great card.
Do
I think
you know
we're done
about...
we're wrapping up Werewolf by Night. We're both really high on him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. 5 out of 5 stars. Get that week if you don't have Silk, absolutely get that week. That Werewolf's gonna be insane. Get him. Any means you can. If you want to get caches, do it. If you want to use tokens, I think you can.
Yeah.
Also, it kind of makes me sad that we get, it shows these. I would absolutely rock this if you bought the variant that came with this.
Yeah.
Why does Snapdot Fan show us this when it's not in the game?
Right, not yet.
You're just teasing me.
I wish.
Do you know about...
Are you following current comics? Apparently Thanos is about to acquire a new Infinity Stone. That's the Black Stone.
Really?
That's okay. It's the current run. It's about to come out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what that accomplishes, but
something new that they're trying. Yeah.
Also, you got Death in the background there. That's awesome. Have you seen Upper Deck's Marvel Beginnings cards?
No. This is a separate game.
Not even a game. It's just collectibles.
Oh, I got you. No, I have not seen these. Unless they're at a gift shop somewhere in Orlando.
Let me just...
Are they also like the different comic artist runs? Speaking of which, if you like the Peach Momoko art, she's about to do a Star Wars collaboration, which looks fantastic.
Is she really?
Yes. They're doing the comic book version of Star Wars Visions by giving different artists a chance to do a Star Wars story. And Peach Momoko is one of them.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. These are the cards.
Some
of them have like autos. I don't know why it's not.
From
loading.
The artists or
yeah,
from
the artists
authors?
Artists from the covers.
Cool.
So one of them is that cover. But then you have... this is just the base card.
Sure.
But it's not a game. It's just like it's like getting a baseball card.
Yeah.
And they're just collectible. They are really cool. There's like
nice.
There's autographed ones. There's what's it called? There's obviously foils and stuff like that.
Oh, sick. Yeah, being able to go to like a convention and have people spitting those around would be fun.
Let's see if it actually shows cards or if it's just like this is gonna
explaining what it is or the breakdown
the
of the characters.
Yep, that's always unfortunate.
Maybe Snap will do a collab sometime and we'll get some
variants of these. It'd be really cool.
Yeah. Or some basically physical versions of like some of the Snap variants into that format. That'd be cool.
I think they're so cool. I have a here. I mean, better yet, just let me do this.
I feel like Snap is actually missing out on a marketing aspect of just doing physical merchandising, like large scale, card scale. They could sell physical memorabilia for so much of the Snap art because they're making absolutely premium art. This is the personal set.
Yeah, so I have some.
Sick. Yes.
So you get like cool foils and stuff.
Yeah.
The more
those are great.
Rogue with like Professor X. These are like the red foils. I really like this Ego. The art's awesome.
Yep.
Even more like, you know, random characters. Jubilee. Like Jubilee and stuff
okay,
like that.
Okay, what is Jubilee's power in the comics? Because I thought that the movies would explain this to me, Brad. In the movies, she just goes to the mall with people. She doesn't use her power.
I think it actually tells you. No, but it's
not. You're just
going
to have to tell me.
Readable.
I'm not going to be able to read that, Brad.
I'm pretty sure it's like sort of like a not quite telekinesis, but kind of. I could be okay. Way wrong. You're asking the wrong person because I did not like X-Men.
Okay.
That was not the comics that I read. So.
Gotcha. I know that she got trained by Wolverine in one version, but yeah.
Got Echo. Oh,
sick.
I just got a huge stack here. There's
nice.
One that you'll recognize if I can find it real quick. Because it's our wonderful friend, and it's a variant that you will recognize.
Do you have a Jeff? Your most played card?
No, I didn't pull Jeff. Jeff's probably in here. There's a man.
The snippets of comic runs where Jeff gets possessed by Venom, which apparently has happened a couple times, is so... Oh, yes. So good. So good.
Got Man-Thing.
Hood and Man-Thing. Let's go.
But yeah, this is so cool. But yeah, Jeff is awesome in the comics. He has a really cool relationship with Deadpool, funnily enough.
Mm-hmm. It's just so adorable.
We got Squirrel Girl.
Let's go.
But yeah, these are just really cool. Also, the cardstock is amazing. Like, usually the cardstock on these kind of cards are kind of, like, flimsy. But, like, they feel...
Because they're meant to just be sleeved.
Yeah.
Like, but they know most people are just going to sleeve them, so they chintz out.
Like, they've kind of barely bend. Like, look how thick they are.
He's junky. That's good.
Yeah, these are awesome. You can't do anything with them besides, like, just be like, I have them, but, you know, good enough for me. I like collecting stupid stuff like this.
Yeah. So next week, we're looking forward to seeing if we've been proven wrong about Black Knight. I'd love that to be the case.
If someone could find a list that just ends up being insane and show me that it works perfectly fine ends up being a top-tier list, I will happily eat a hat. Don't care.
Are we getting a patch or an OTA, or is that an off week?
Patch.
I don't
OTA,
remember if
off,
this is. I think this is an off week.
It should be
is
an
what
off
my
week.
Gut's telling me.
It goes patch, OTA, off week, OTA.
Yep.
Right? When was the patch?
Well, the patch was 2 weeks ago, and then we got the OTA just last week.
So
yeah, I think it's going to be an off
week.
We get our new card.
And then the Nico week is the next OTA.
Yep, we'll see where things are settling. It's going to be leading right up into the OTA patch that we get to play Infinite Conquest on, so that'll be fun.
That's true. Yeah, because Infinite Week is the one that you don't want to touch. I don't know. So Glenn recently was talking about like cards like Punisher and like Captain America and stuff like that. And
oh, yes,
that there,
finally.
There wants to be a balance between like having characters that are like, you know, noticeable or like recognizable for early players.
Yep.
But also being viable in late game.
Yes.
And that's really tough.
Right. That's where the high evolutionary saving Cyclops was such a smart choice.
Yes. I would like to get more cards like that. I kind of wish Nick Fury did something along those lines of high evo rather than where he just makes the Avengers a different set of cards.
Yo, yes.
But then I think if you oversaturate the game with those kind of effects, it gets kind of old. But I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, you have to bring in a unique way of doing it. I've always wondered about if they could add, instead of the big bads, it's the hero team cards, and it's like just the card is the Avengers, and then it has an effect that like lets the Avengers combo together some way.
Yeah, but like, the most they'll probably do when it comes to Punisher is, like, what, make him a 3-3? And same thing with Cap. Like,
I hope not. I would really love to see lower base power, bigger ability, but
look at Watu. They easily could have made him see everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
But they don't because he's an early card.
Yep.
I saw someone recommend something because... This was asked to Glenn, of like why that was. And he's like, well, because we want people in the early game, because where Wather is available, they want them to understand the strain and the importance of looking at locations and their variants and like what that can represent to the game, and giving them just a catch-all very early where they don't learn that lesson properly is bad for them. So someone right. I saw looked at that. I think it was from the Daily Bugle on Twitter. Someone replied to that and said, then, okay, put Watu into Series 3, move Jeff into Series 1, Howard. Because Howard does that very small amount of information, but still provides the correct agency and importance of like understanding variants to those early players, where it accomplishes right. what Watu would. Where then you can make Watu a Series 3 card and actually sees everything.
Nah, I don't know. I'm not too enthrilled about the Watu in any way. So
I mean, yeah, but be nice.
But I would love to see Cap and Punisher get elevated in some way to be viable. And they've done it with Medusa, but it's like, yeah, you have to envision these are cards that are getting played at the same time as Shocker. Shocker without Patriot, right? Like, that's what your collection is. And yeah. So they can only do so much. And I do like that they're given to the players early to be able to play, because they have really cool effects. They have good voice lines and stuff. So,
and Shocker was that card where in the tutorial it's like, replace this card with the Sentinel.
Yeah, the Sentinel is the strict upgrade.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
There's no downside to doing this in any way, shape, or form. So just do this.
Yeah. It makes me feel bad for Shocker. Yeah. But hey, we're getting really cool Twitch drop variant, where the Shocker buggy.
That's the perfect segue. Catch me streaming on Twitch, TeddyNinja15, when the drops come out. You know you're going to be able to get some drops with us. Brad, are you on Twitch yet, or are you just doing the YouTube stream?
I
know
that
Twitch. You launched it.
I mean, I have Twitch. I haven't streamed on it since I played Magic. Okay. Maybe I'll make the switch to that. I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe. Otherwise, right. For now, my home is YouTube, my home is Twitter, all that good stuff. And, of course, being on this show with you and then, you know, Can't Stop Snapping is a great, wonderful way to spend my my week. And then I get to spend my biweekly event of Snap on Ego with Chris and then writing articles on CCG, which we should get you to write some articles. We already got myself over there. We got Drew Barry over there. Lambie even wrote an article for them.
Oh, heck yeah.
So if you have any faith in your own writing ability, then I recommend doing it.
Nice. I think that'll do it for this week.
Good episode. Will. And we love you. We appreciate you. You guys are amazing. And we hope you come back and join us next week when we talk about Nico. So, bye-bye.
Don't stop snapping.
Can't Stop Snapping is a podcast hosted and produced by Brad Seffert and Teddy Ninja, originally created by Michael Thurman.